This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 7th of December 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week we're continuing our series of look-ahead shows to 2016. So far we've tackled music and film, and today we're going to dim the lights and cosy up on the sofa for some of next year's TV highlights. What will be the new Mad Men, and is there a Scandinavian or French noir we should be gearing up for? Will Netflix still rule the online streaming roost? Over the next half an hour I'll be joined by small screen guru Peter White to find out the trends, regions and formats we should be looking out for. TV critic John Doyle will give us the lowdown on the big series from North America next year, and Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, will tell us what she's looking forward to sticking on the box this Christmas.
It's inevitably going to be mesmerising, and this will show that north, barren, snowy landscape in a way that you've never been able to before.
So stay tuned as we have a night in on this week's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. And I'm joined by Peter White from Broadcast Magazine to look into his crystal ball, his cultural kaleidoscope. Kaleidoscope, does that do... I know what we're talking about. I know what I meant to say. Clairvoyant. Cultural clairvoyance. I think that's what I'm aiming
for. Mystic Meg.
Yeah, exactly. Mystic Meg. But with a nicer line in facial hair, I might say, Mr. White.
Thank you, Jim.
So what do you see in the crystal ball looking forward to 2016? I wonder, first of all, if we're looking at a kind of revolutionary year or whether we're looking at the new platforms that have kind of popped up in 2015 to consolidating and all the rest of it. How do you see the kind of... the big tectonic shape, plates shifting.
We've certainly seen this year's the start of things. Netflix and Amazon and everyone else, it seems to be the moment where the average television consumer has actually got on board. We've been talking about these companies and these services and such for quite some time, but it feels like the moment where actually the person on the sofa is actually watching some of these shows. They know what you're talking about. They don't actually see it as any different to television. You know, my mother can watch something on the Netflix without really thinking it's any different to BBC One.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've certainly got to that point. And Netflix in particular has got a lineup of shows next year that's going to be pretty good. And Amazon as well has got some things that, you know, should hopefully break them through even more.
Well, shall we stick with those guys then? Sure. Before we go to the American network stuff and the particular genres and the particular specifics, why don't we talk about these two new big players, producers and platforms, Netflix and Amazon Prime. Why don't we take Amazon Prime first? They've got some really exciting news in Woody Allen,
yes,
for one thing.
Yeah, this is their big one. You know, Woody Allen has never done television, you know. He sort of works in his own way. He's never really stepped out of that, even in films. So the fact that they managed to persuade him, he was joking. He sort of doesn't know how they managed to persuade him to do a TV show, but he's working on it anyway in pure Allen fashion. But yeah, that's going to be fascinating. No one's seen anything. No one's read anything. I think they're still sort of letting him get on with it. But that's likely to come towards the end of next year. And that's going to be a real game changer for Amazon. I think that's going to be the sort of moment where they actually might start competing. Because they've had a couple of interesting shows. Transparent was quite good this year. And they've just launched The Man in the High Castle, the Philip K. Dick adaptation. But this could be the one that actually makes people move on to Amazon and actually pay for it.
And they've been quite clever in their acquisition of not necessarily sort of intellectual property, but in terms of names. I mean, Woody Allen on one end of the kind of cultural scale, you might think Jeremy Clarkson on the other, which is sort of worth smirking at, but perhaps the most watched TV star in one of the most important territories in the world signing up as well. They obviously mean a great deal of business and are trying to cover all their bases.
I'd love to see that Christmas party where Jeremy meets Woody, wouldn't you? That would be a moment. I'm not sure what either of them would make of the other.
It'd be literally brilliant.
It would be, you know, they should film it if they ever did get
everyone
together.
Everyone would tune in for that.
A company retreat, you could make a show out of that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Woody thing is fascinating. But getting Jeremy and his sort of pals for the new Top Gear, whatever they're going to call it, is massive. I mean, I'll admit I was a bit dubious when people were talking about them, thinking, no, they'll never get that. There's other people with more money. There's more, other people with a bit more cachet. So the fact that they actually managed to persuade them to come and do it will be huge for them because, you know, as you said there, Top Gear is not just a hit in the UK, it is probably one of the most watched shows around the world. You know, I think there were some figures in China this week. The latest episode of the Chinese version, the local adaptation, was watched by over 200 million people. So it's a real thing where if they can sort of tap into that. And Amazon's not in that many markets at the moment. It's in the UK, it's in Germany, and it's starting to roll out in a few other places, and they're sort of hoping they can use something like this to help them do that.
And the other big boy boys in that neck of the sort of woods in terms of sort of new platforms, Netflix, not so new now, of course. What can we expect from them? I mean, obviously we know the platform works, we know they're faithful to it and think it's a good idea, but what can we see on that?
The things they have this year that have really popped, the sort of Marvel shows and some of the things like the Aziz Ansari show, Master of None, which has been getting some good reviews in the last couple of weeks. They're all American at the moment, and I think the thing that next year that might actually make Netflix, make people who weren't necessarily Netflix subscribers subscribe, is the sort of local adaptations. They're doing this show called The Crown, which is this huge adaptation of the play, and they're doing it with Andy Harries. So that's going to be a really, you know, it looks at the life of the Queen and how it's gone over several decades, and that's going to be a massive show. And then there's a show called Marseille, which is a sort of French political thriller. And each of their different territories, they're starting, and all of these shows will be available everywhere. So they're starting to sort of see, maybe we can get away from just these big US hits, and there'll be some right. interesting sort of local versions, local shows.
And that's an interesting thing, I suppose, as well, because you have the local audience in France or the French-speaking parts of the world that are on Netflix that want to watch Marseille. And then you have, you know, your sort of BBC Four type of viewer or your HBO type of viewer in the US who wants to watch an intelligent drama with subtitles or is predisposed to something with subtitles.
Yeah.
The new Scandi Noir, it's all this kind of stuff. Interestingly, a Gomorrah follow-up by Subara, by the same writer.
Exactly, and the same writer, same team who made the show. So yeah, that's another one. That's going to be huge. You know, Gomorrah was one of those shows like The Killing, like The Bridge and Borgen that actually sort of transcended the fact that it was a foreign language show. I think foreign language is going to be really big this year. There's a couple of plays. This is obviously going to be one of them. People are watching subtitles. Channel 4 in the UK has just backed a service called Walter Presents, which is an online service, and it's going to be thousands of hours of foreign language drama. So you will literally be able to see every show, you know, every sort of high quality show around the world in the UK, and they're looking to launch that in other parts of the world as well. So this sort of movement that sort of feels that we've had those few that have broken through, you know, The Bridge is on TV at the moment, the new series, but I think we're getting to that point where we might actually see even more of these and see some shows from places you don't see, whether it's Argentina or, you know, as I say, Latin America or even Asia, where we don't really know what their drama is.
Okay, so we've ticked off, we can call them the new players, Netflix and Amazon. Not so new now, perhaps, but it looks like the future is bright in 2016 for these guys, and they're kind of amazing signings as well. Let's talk about the very kind of nature of episodic TV, Pete. I know this is something you kind of tipped to be an interesting thing in 2016. You've called it the 13-hour movie.
Yeah.
Talk us through what you mean by that. Sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
Das Boot without any ad breaks or toilet breaks.
I've seen some films that have been nearly as long, but it's at the Cannes Film Festival. But no, this is the idea that historically, you know, dramas have always been an hour on television, you know, with 47 minutes with adverts, and comedies, you know, half that. So we're sort of seeing some of these companies and producers, and not just the new players, but some of the more established broadcasters, looking to see people watch TV in a different way. They don't necessarily sit down at 8 o'clock and watch something. So the idea that they stick something online, they can pause it whenever they like. This idea that Bo Willimon, the guy from House of Cards, the guy who made the US version, was saying that in the future, he's just going to make 13 hours of a show like that. His next project could well be just produce it like a 13-hour movie and give it to the audience in that fashion. So that, but you can decide if you've got 20 minutes, you can watch 20 minutes of this and pause it and come back to it when you're ready. Or if you want to sit up and watch, you know, all 13 hours of it, that's up to you. But this idea that you've got the choice, and I think now that we've all got tellies that can do that, we've all got, you know, these services, and it's no longer that you've got to plug something in, everything's so accessible, that I like this idea that you aren't going to necessarily have that break where, you know, you've been told this is the end of the episode.
It's a really interesting idea. I remember speaking to the creator of Borg and Adam Price. And Michael Dobbs, who wrote the original House of Cards here in the UK, about this. And they said they loved the idea of writing for something that they didn't need to write cliffhangers at the end of every show.
Yeah.
The end of every 47 minutes, for example, they didn't have to write a cliffhanger. But this is taking it really a step further, isn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that you, presumably when you go on to Netflix, whatever it might be, that it's just literally one block of material. It's kind of it'll be a strange thing, but maybe for people to get used to and to get out of that habit of going for an hour or 2 hours. Do you think it might go full circle and just people might end up enjoying watching an hour and a half long feature film?
I think it might get to the point people will watch an hour of the show and pause it. And I think the interesting thing, the majority of people will probably still watch the television in the same fashion, whether they watch an hour, 2 hours, but you're very unlikely to get too many people that are going to sit through more than that of an evening. But what it will mean, and what it will make a difference to is the storytelling, the way in which the person who's written that show writes that. As you say, they will no longer have to feel, they have to have that beat at the end so there's a cliffhanger. So it might actually end up with some really interesting stories. The way these unfold might actually be a bit different. So we might see a sort of change in the form.
Okay, well, let's talk about film adaptations, talking of kind of the blurring of the lines between films and not. This was a feature of 2015, yeah. and I think you're tipping it to be a feature of 2016, writ large as well. A prequel to Psycho, following the footsteps of Fargo, etc., etc. Tell us about some of your choices for 2016.
Please. Yeah, this isn't going away. I think last year we saw a few things like you said, Fargo, Minority Report in the States, although that didn't do very well, it's been cancelled. But I think this idea that these film stars are moving over to TV, you look at Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson and such, but now they're sort of thinking maybe films can move into TV. It was just announced that Kevin Bacon was going to do a new version of Tremors next year, which, you know, could be great. It can't be any worse than the second series of The Following. So there's shows like that, and Liam Neeson's doing exec producing a reboot of Taken, which, you know, you can see as a TV show. You know, it's the kind of dumb film, so there's no reason why it can't be a dumb TV show. But also, I think that...
A kind of movie like that, I suppose, is one of these things where you never quite get to the end of it.
Exactly. There's always a case of the week. Yeah. You know, people love these sort of case of the weeks, whether it's the CSIs or whatever, and there's always that ability. But equally, that's not just happening in the States. There's a Korean film called Snowpiercer, which was actually based on a French comic, and they're turning that into a TV series. You know, it was a very successful movie. And they don't necessarily adapt them in the way they just take the film and make it into sort of chunks. They actually sort of try and move the story on. You can sort of take the element of the film and turn it into a bit of a sort of longer running show.
Okay, well, let's finish. It's always nice to tip a country that's sort of a nascent country as a format developer. And you've done it for us before, Pete. What is your tip for 2016?
So I think that we always say this, you know, Israel is the new Holland, and this year I'm sort of tipping Korea to be the new Israel. There's always a country where the Western world, it seems, that looks and goes over to these countries to sort of mine their libraries of television that we haven't seen before. And the interesting thing is we haven't really tapped into Asia before. They've started to have some really fascinating formats. I mean, they've been making incredible game shows for years. Everyone knows that the Japanese make some of the craziest game show and entertainment formats. But Korea's got some really different shows. There's a couple. There's one called Where Are You Going, Dad?, which is this sort of... take your kid to school kind of format. Yeah. And there's something really quite sweet. It's got a sort of long lost family element to it. And they're quite heartening. The Korean formats are very sort of positive. And this is the thing that I guess this sort of matches with Asian culture, that you can't have the sort of Gordon Ramsay shouting at people kind of show. But what you can have is these really interesting and sort of mind bending ideas. A game show called The Genius Game, which is based on a manga series. And it's game theory, but it's a game show that does that. And no episode is the same. There's always a different challenge. And it really just looks like it fucks with people's minds. And you see these contestants that come out of it. And you know, it's not like they've come out of Deal or No Deal.
Looking visibly diminished.
Yeah, you know, the losers and even the winners in some cases, they come out of these things looking really
haggard.
Confused. Rather than, you know, the guy comes off millionaire and who's won, you know, 100 quid and he just, you know, just sort of stumbles across. So yeah, I think Korea could be really interesting. I think that could also lead to a bit of an opening of the door for Asia. Another Korean format that I forgot to mention that William Shatner is remaking. In the States they're calling it Better Late Than Never, but in Korea it's called Grandpas Over Flowers. And you essentially take these four old guys who were famous or are famous, whether they're actors or in different professions, and take them to another part of the world and just dump them there and see how they get on and see if they can make it home. And these people who are probably sort of used to having money and help to try and you know, do everything they need to, and whereas this, you know, this
and a handrail.
Yeah, exactly.
And get my memo about the handrail.
And leaving them, and they've got to get back to Souls. So yeah, there's some fascinating formats coming out of there, and I think that's just the start. You know, maybe next year we'll be talking about Vietnam or certain, you know, Indonesia or some of these other places where the Western world doesn't necessarily look for television.
Well, it's a fascinating roundup. We've done it in double quick time. We've got a million notes as well, which our readers will have to, their appetites might be whetted. Maybe they can read more of it in the February issue of Monocle magazine. I think that might be something we can organise for them. For the time being, I can't wait for all of that stuff. I just wish I had more days of holiday in order to get square eyes.
Yes, we need to find a way that you can actually watch television while you're working, or, you know, the sort of the Google Glass approach, perhaps.
Yeah, that's what we need, a small window. Like when you were secretly watching the test match at
exactly.
work.
Yeah, that never happened.
No one heard me say that, did they? Peter White from Broadcast Magazine, thank you very much for looking into the snow globe or the crystal ball
thank
for
you.
2016. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Now, as we're fast approaching Christmas, we thought we'd dedicate a section of this week's show to what to settle down in front of after tackling the biggest meal of the year, and we need a couple of hours of quiet. Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for the Daily Telegraph here in the UK, gives us her tips on the TV shows, box sets and online series that will surely keep your Christmas afternoon a peaceful one.
There's a momentous event happening on ITV this Christmas Day, and that is the final ever episode of Downton Abbey. Now, for some of you, this might be something worth rejoicing in the streets about, but despite the fact it's been going on for 5 years, it is an enormously popular TV programme, and finally we'll be able to see what Julian Fellowes has had in mind for the cast that have earned a firm place in many people's hearts. There's bound to be tears, so grab the tissues at the ready, and then sit around and think about what next period drama we can all get into.
I hope you're not too unhappy about the way things have turned out.
The world is a different place from the way it was, my lord, and Downton Abbey must change with it.
Master of None exploded onto Netflix screens earlier this year and didn't take long for people to start comparing its creator, director and star Aziz Ansari of being the new Woody Allen. You're wise to catch it while you can, because there are so many contemporary references in this hilarious, offbeat and pertinent sitcom that they might run out of date soon. It's perfect to sit around if you've got grown-up kids or a bunch of friends and laugh at the post-millennial discussions going on, as well as have a thought-provoking discussion about the issues raised of being a first-generation immigrant living in New York.
What is a race breakdown of your previous dates?
White. Half Asian, and you.
Whoa, so that half Asian guy, he was kind of a gateway drug to me?
I guess so. Who knows what'll be next?
I do. White guy.
Transparent made history by being the first TV series to be created by Amazon to win an Emmy, and deservedly so. This brilliant, touching, funny series is all about a dysfunctional family living in California as the father of the house turns into the mother of the house.
Hello.
Oh, hello. I'm Marcy.
Hi, I'm Daphne Sparkles.
Creator Jill Soloway based this series on the experiences of her own father going through a gender transformation in middle age. And despite the heavy topic, there's a lot of jokes to be had and a lot of home truths for any family watching. So if you're looking for a box set to entertain you this Christmas, it's really got to be Mad Men. You might not have ever seen it, you might have been a fan from the start, or you might have sort of dropped off in the middle. But really, now we've come to the end of 7 series, it's the time to pick up and fully immerse yourself in the world of Matthew Wiener and his incredible cast of characters as they negotiate the advertising world in the 50s and 60s. You will fall in love with these characters, you will fall in love with their costumes, and you'll fall in love with the whole sumptuous world that's presented to us. So sit back, grab an old-fashioned, and prepare to lose a whole week as you watch this incredible series. Slow TV is a phenomenon that's really caught on this year, and maybe it's a sign that we've all got too much to do in our lives, but at Christmas, hopefully we haven't. Either way, BBC Four have come up with a festive edition to keep everyone slowly mesmerised this Christmas. So the sleigh ride is this really amazing concept where you sit and for 2 hours watch a sleigh ride unfold in front of you as this traditional sleigh is carted through the crunching snow of Lapland, and all you can hear is the jingle of bells, the pulling of dogs, and the snow crunching underneath the sleigh. It sounds simple. It's inevitably going to be mesmerising, and this will show that north, barren, snowy landscape in a way that you've never been able to before.
Thank you, Alice Vincent. After the break, we're back to business with a look at the big TV series we'll be looking at next year with TV critic John Doyle.
The Monocle Daily sets the agenda in Asia and considers what's been dominating the day in Europe and North America.
The programme is often co-hosted out of our Toronto and New York bureau and features regular interviews with special guests both there and across the Americas, as well as experts and analysts at our studios in London.
Monocle 24's regular weekly guide to the perfect Friday night in includes some of our favourite cities around the world and features the insights of the people who know those places best, our unrivalled network of of correspondence.
Join me, Emma Nelson.
And me, Andrew Muller.
Your regular hosts for the Monocle Daily every weekday at 6 a.m. in Tokyo, 2200 hours in London.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where this week we're sifting through next year's TV highlights to come up with a comprehensive, we hope, checklist of what to watch. We're now going to turn to North America to talk big series. Every year there's plenty coming out of the region that keeps watchers the world over glued to their screens. What is going to fill the Mad Men-shaped void? What's returning for exciting new seasons? And what are going to be the most binged-on series? We asked John Doyle, TV critic for the Globe and Mail in Toronto.
You know where you are.
I'm in a dream.
That's right, Dolores. You want to wake up from this dream?
Yes. I'm terrified.
Then answer my question correctly. Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
Westworld is definitely the hottest show, I think, coming mid-season. It has the most buzz behind it, and not just from sci-fi fans who always get excited about the latest, most extraordinary thing coming in the sort of sci-fi or fantasy genre, but Westworld has an incredible team behind it. It is, as HBO says, a dark odyssey about the dawn of artificial consciousness. So you're talking about robots and artificial intelligence. It is set in a world in which Anthony Hopkins plays the mad genius who has created this Western world where robots do everything and people can buy a visit to this place and behave as they want, whether it's a benign fantasy or something much darker. Inevitably, of course, the robots revolt. That is the gist of it. It promises to be, I think, dark and sexy. HBO has been very careful in not doing more than releasing rather short trailers for it. But the series is already notorious in the business for one thing. When it was being filmed, extras working on the series were asked to sign a highly unusual waiver in which they were obliged to acknowledge that they would appear nude and there would be simulation of rather blatant sex in it. So I think we could be seeing, apart from the great drama of it, we could be seeing robot orgies on this show.
Wow, okay, well that's something to look forward to. And maybe if robot orgies aren't your thing, how about Vinyl? This is another commission that's coming out next year.
Vinyl is a hot show, and for critics, they did a fairly extended trailer for it. It comes from Martin Scorsese, Mick Jagger, and Terrence Winter, who of course was one of the main figures behind The Sopranos and also Broadway Empire. It is about the music business. It's set in the 1970s in New York. It has a lot of great people in it. Bobby Cannavale, who was on The Sopranos, is the lead as a sort of record company executive. Olivia Wilde, Ray Romano, a bunch of other people are involved in it. I'm a bit wary of Vinyl because I think most shows that are about the music business, it takes something particular for them to click. There are several caveats about, you know, series that are about the music business. First of all, the music itself. It costs an enormous amount of money to use real music. So if you're going to use real classic music from the 70s, whether it's punk or disco or whatever, it costs a great deal. And if you're going to do fake music or music that's created now that is supposed to approximate music from that period, sometimes it can simply seem phony. So Vinyl, I think, is going to get a lot of attention before it airs, but as I say, I'm a bit wary of the actual quality of it.
I believe in this company's future. New, fresh, fast, exciting. That's what I want.
Now I wanna be your dog.
I haven't seen a band get that reaction ever.
They was trying to kill us.
Because you made them feel something.
I guess this is set in the 70s. It's a kind of a period drama, but it's industry focused as well. So you don't think this is going to sort of fill the shoes that Mad Men have left behind?
That's a really interesting question because, you know, as we leaving 2015 behind, we finally saw the end of Mad Men. Breaking Bad is now long gone. And although there's a lot of great television, and this golden age of television is continuing, we haven't really seen a series that is going to match Mad Men or Breaking Bad in terms of psychological depth, so sociological observation, that kind of thing. At the moment, I think, in the industry, there's less of a tendency to aim for shows of that quality and more of a tendency to aim for shows at the sort of Game of Thrones level, which, again, is extremely hard to match.
If you thought somebody might manage to fill this void, who would you look towards to be the next person to create this great series? Maybe a network or a director?
I think HBO is where it will be, although we've seen great series on Netflix and from Amazon Prime. I think perhaps next year we will also be looking at shows that are really good and that have a captive audience in terms of quality and simply buzz about them, and they come from HBO. One I would look out for is the show Divorce, which is a comedy coming on HBO in 2016. What's unusual about it is that the creator is Sharon Horgan, who, of course, created Catastrophe, that remarkable British, very dirty romantic comedy, which was distinguished by a very raw sense of humor. And that's a show that really kicked ass. Usually with HBO, writers, creators are given the freedom to do what they want. And this is a show about a long, very, very long divorce. And Sarah Jessica Parker is involved in it. So this could be the sort of second coming of Sex and the City with a great deal more raw content involved. So that's something I would really look forward to seeing.
Okay, well, that's Divorce. That kind of ends our trio of shows that are coming up on HBO. Let's move on now to Showtime, and they've got a new show coming up called Billions. What's this all about, John?
Well, this is a high-finance drama. It's a very good cast, Paul Giamatti and Damian Lewis. And Lewis plays the billionaire hedge fund manager. Giamatti is the guy from the feds, to put it crudely, who is after him. It sounds great on paper. One caveat, of course, is that, you know, Showtime does not have the same level of quality control that HBO does. And there's the possibility that at this point, a show that is really about issues that were vital a few years ago after the crash of 2008 seem a bit dated now. Now, you know, I haven't seen it yet. I'm only looking at a synopsis on paper. But it's one of those shows that could go either way. The cast certainly would lead you to believe that this is going to be a first-rate show.
Okay, well, we're going to have to move things swiftly on. And one of the big returns for next year is the return of The X-Files. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I have actually seen the first part of this revival of The X-Files. However, Fox has put an embargo on reviews for now. I will say that it's interesting. However, I don't think it's a secret to say that reviving The X-Files for six episodes, a short-run series, is a stunt television making. It's relying on a franchise that is recognizable, that a good deal of the audience already knows about. And I would say that six episodes is just fine for reviving The X-Files. I think the old audience for the show will certainly enjoy it. It has most of the same characters. It has much of the same tone. The filmmaking or television making techniques these days allow for it to be more visually sumptuous and intriguing. But I worry about networks when they are reduced to sort of stunts like reviving a show that is familiar for just six episodes and expecting that it will have the same impact. There is a touch of desperation about it, even though the show is far from bad.
That was John Doyle, TV critic for The Globe and Mail, and that brings us to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was Square Eyes Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week when we'll be ending our Look Ahead series with a glance at the big art events of 2016. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thanks for tuning in.